Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Gallifrey Williams.
Yeah.
I figure I'd give you a cool one on our last one.
Better. It's mandatory now.
We have been on this fantastic journey of discovering the wonders of Doctor Who, and of course, what journey is incomplete without the faithful companion intern Amy.
Yeah.
Hey, that actually kind of worked because there's an Amy in the good. Yay.
Well.
Whee!
If it surprises you folks, that's the first take. So, we got a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the final entry into our four-part celebration of Doctor Who, and that is the 13th Doctor special in the second season, Spyfall. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
On the social swams, that's right. You can check us out all over the web at filmlosophers.com, where we did this whole month of Doctor Who. But if you're not into Doctor Who, what about horror movies? What about Bruce Lee? What about Studio Ghibli? We have a month for each one of those, and you can check all of those out at our website, filmlosophers.com. Also, check us out on any streaming platform, Google Play, Libsyn, Audioboom, iTunes, Spotify. See, do you hear that? I was rewinding with the sound. Spotify and Pandora. So, why am I getting big eyes over there from the guys?
Only and Pandora. I've expectations. I have faltered. Pandora! It happens.
Okay. I had said that I would be nice this episode to an extent if it's not...
So that means we have about 10 minutes left on your niceness.
We have 10? Yeah.
So,
we're up.
So here's the thing.
Better hustle.
On instigated, I can be kind. Slightly
uninstigated.
Yes. But you know what? You're doing it. You're doing it and doing it and doing it wild.
Like, yay! Just you're over there. I like that song.
So, like we said, we got a great show in store for you as we cap this whole month off, and we couldn't think of any way better to cap this month off than to cap it with the most recent theatrical event that happened right before the pandemic, and that.
Like, I was shocked to learn this was happening this year.
Yes.
This has been the year that would not end.
I mean,
true.
Very true. We are talking about the 13th Doctor's special, Spyfall. So, this was a two-part episode that was, it was aired, the first part actually was aired on TV, and then in between that small time frame, they aired both 1 and 2 in theaters, and then they aired part 2 on BBC. So it was really interesting the way they did that, because I remember when we went to go see it, because Spencer and I, before everything, it's like...
Yeah, no, I remember you're super right about that, because I remember I was like, I don't want to wait a week for Spyfall Part 2,
exactly.
And then I saw it was in theaters, I'm like...
Because I believe it was either on, we went on New Year's Day... or the day after, but it was around that time when the first episode aired, and then they were going to play the first and second episode back to back. So we got a chance to check that out this year, and needless to say, it was a great opportunity. I wasn't one who had been interested in seeing Jodie Whittaker, just because I hadn't been hearing good things about the first season, but then watching this really kind of reinvigorated that. So before we continue, Spencer, why don't you give them that official synopsis goodness?
intelligence agents around the world are under attack from alien forces, so MI6 turns to the only people who can help, the Doctor and friends. As they travel the globe looking for answers, attacks come from all sides. Earth security rests on the team's shoulders, but where will the planet-threatening conspiracy lead them?
That was kind of funny. Intelligence is very Russian.
Intelligence.
We talk about intelligence, yes?
As we said, this episode and his second part aired on January 1st and the 5th, respectively, and was played in theaters live. Well, it was played in theaters with a live Q&A.
Yeah.
Which, that was cool because we actually stuck around for. Mm-hmm. And we got to hear that. So, this is a very interesting episode for several reasons. This is a very interesting special for several reasons. Number one, it is the first theatrical event, including the Doctor, played by Jodie Whittaker, number one. But more so than that, it's the latest opportunity to showcase the Doctor as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's been something kind of behind the scenes. That's been something that me and Spencer had been talking about for some time now, in terms of the impact that all plays. And we'll get into that as we talk about Jodie and talk about her, her role as the 13th Doctor. But before we do, I wanted to kind of go over a couple things. Now, number one, I'm going to be brutally honest. I did not see the first season, and I earnestly believe I didn't see the first season because I believe it was you who had mentioned it's like, it's not really, nah.
That first episode from season one was really rough coming out, like, and it was free on free on BBC.
Was that
and,
the woman who fell to Earth or
yeah, something like that?
Yeah, and it was like it didn't hit right.
A lot of series 11 for me didn't hit right.
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing problem. On the plus side, series 12 is mostly an uphill good thing.
Mostly.
Except for a few landing sticking points which people just went bananas over.
Which we'll talk about those as we continue the episode, because there are a few key things that happen throughout this particular season that do cause into question how the next season is going to take it from there. And
I have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, but we're
I don't, because I haven't finished watching season 12 because I don't have HBO Max on my Roku.
Wait, no, okay, so hold the phone. You have HBO Max, you just don't have the accessibility of it on your Roku.
I don't want to sit and experience Doctor Who on my telephone. I'm not sitting in the tube.
I already know what I'm going to do. I have something for you after this.
There's a plan.
Oh my god.
Yes, plan. Excellent. So,
discussing Doctor Who and this final opportunity, this is kind of like the capping of a month-long journey, as we stated. And obviously the first question that we're going to have to ask Spencer is, what was the reasoning behind choosing this particular special to be chosen? Because not just to cap it off, but just to pick.
Well, it's really the only thing they aired from Jodie's run. And luckily for me, this is actually one of the best episodes she's done. The other one I would say is probably pretty good is the one right before this. I only seen it once, but I think it was called Revolution or something. It was whatever the special for Series 11
was.
It
was right at the end, yeah.
Yeah, and that one had a Dalek in it. It was pretty good.
Hmm.
So, this one, though, like I'd only seen part one when we went to the theaters, I was pretty impressed with where it had gone to by that point. I was like, yeah, I definitely want to pay to see the second part. Slightly before everyone else, haha. So that's kind of why you're getting on the list.
There you go. Amy.
Yo.
You have not seen much of the 13th Doctor's episodes.
I've seen all of season one.
Okay.
And then the specials.
Which apparently, according to Spence, doesn't really count, but okay. It's like Smith's second season.
Oh, that was rude.
Not second season, third season. Sorry. Right?
Stump.
Actually, it is kind of that levels of bad of series 7.
Again, because
I got one right.
We have those problems with it's the stack. There's some that are like, yes, it's this one's stack. Great. And then other ones are like, ooh.
See, with series 11, I kind of only feel like, because the special was good and kind of the opening was a good setup.
Hold on. What special was good?
I need to look up what the title is. is, because I keep saying special because I don't know what it is.
Is it the one that we reviewed?
No, it is Resolution. It's this, that's the holiday special. Since
they oh, the festive special.
Yeah, I'm mad about that too. But
hey,
it's not even.
Do you mind?
I'm
you are humming, and he's trying to talk. That's
I was
rude.
Humming the theme. It worked with his.
I didn't hear what he said.
I'm sorry, Spencer. Sorry, my humming.
Excuse the rude intern who forgot donuts.
I brought cocoa.
She did this without any donuts.
No, if this was cider, you bring donuts. Cocoa, you bring
you
cookies.
You have a cider right there.
I don't know if that's a cider. They were questionable when they were making
so,
things.
So, the festive special that was the in season 11.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was one prior. Did that get aired in theaters?
No.
No.
No, this is the only thing from Jodie that's been in theaters.
Okay. Well, like we said, we're going to dive into this particular one. This one is very unique for a couple reasons. And there's a couple things that I really do want to touch on. So diving right in, one of the unique things about this particular special is, first off, it is mirroring like every single espionage film known to man, like satirically. Even the title Spyfall is an homage to Skyfall. Mm-hmm. So it's and it's sad that you have like the illustrious Stephen Fry in this episode for like maybe a millisecond and then he's
yeah.
gone.
I was like, yay! And then it's like, oh, and he's dead. Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought that was awfully quick to kill someone that high caliber.
Yeah. It's like, I get he's a comedic actor, but this is just wrong. Like, it just seemed like it was like, in he is, out he goes.
You're like, keep talking to us just a little bit more. We need you, see? Because that was his character was, see?
Oh. So,
I'm ashamed of myself.
But one of the unique aspects of this particular episode is we get, and obviously spoilers, we put spoilers in all these things.
Yeah.
We get a wonderful, absolutely phenomenal reveal of this this doctor's version of, or whatever, this regeneration of the Master.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is weird because the last time we saw the Master, he was stabbed, and she, excuse me,
they.
I know where I'm going. No, not they.
There's two of them.
So
they.
He was stabbed, and she was shot.
Yeah. By each other.
By each other, yes. So
they were so angry at themselves. I'm not wrong.
No, you're not. Also, perfect way to take both of them out.
One gets stabbed, one gets shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. But to be quite honest, like, I didn't really think I was going to be seeing, like, they're a really key character in the life of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been several iterations, as we've talked about on the episode. We mentioned just in the ones that we were talking about right now, you got Missy, the female regeneration of the Master.
Mm-hmm.
You got John Sims, who is the most recent male, well, prior to the one we're talking about now, regeneration of the Master. Before that, who did you have?
Derek Jacobi. Yeah. Or Jacobi.
Yeah.
He's a sir. He got knighted.
Oh. Mm.
But he's in Gladiator, like Underworld.
He's in Gladiator?
Yeah, he's in Gladiator.
Who's he in Gladiator?
Gracchus.
You read this. Okay.
Yes. Because I went to go check his because I was like, I don't remember him in Gladiator.
Gracchus?
There you go.
Gracchus.
There you go.
He's I know who you're
Other
talking
languages
about.
Languages are hard.
Is he the one who's in Anonymous, that movie at the very beginning when they're doing the Okay, she's looking up. Okay.
No, I'm showing picture because yeah.
He's at the beginning
face,
of Anonymous.
Face.
Yeah.
Which by the way, Anonymous is such
so
a great
good.
Movie.
We will fix that.
Long story long story short, Shakespearean conspiracy told from back in the day.
Okay.
It's really cool. Okay, Gracchus is the name, not whatever you said.
I said Gratus.
No, Gracchus.
That's what we use at work.
Remember, Roman, so Gracchus. But okay, so he played the Master before that. Mm-hmm. That would be really cool to see. What iteration? What is he in?
So he's in Tenet.
Yeah, he's in one episode of Tenet.
Oh my gosh, why do I?
Because he's the one with the fog.
Not remember most of these episodes.
It was during Martha's run,
and he was the fob. So right before the regeneration, it was right before the regeneration. He was a doctor. Yeah. He was some type of a doctor, yeah. And basically the Master was in a fob.
A fob.
So in this case, the fob was. I keep doing this because I see it in my head. It's
I'm
a
like,
pocket.
Nobody
watch.
Else is seeing what
nope,
you're doing.
No one can see my hands.
You could be doing the most obscene gesture, and nobody would know what you're talking about. He's in this. I swear he is.
Like, he's in a pocket watch.
Well, then say he's in a pocket watch
because they called it a fob.
They did. I assume that's British for watch. Ah.
So he was in a fob. Blah blah blah.
So the essence of the Master was in a pocket watch, and okay. Derek Jacobi, his character as this other doctor, ended up opening it, releasing the spirit, the essence, whatever of the Master. He gets killed and then regenerates into John Sims.
Yeah,
and then we have John Sims.
And then he did a bunch of audiobooks.
Yes, he did.
Interesting.
Hear the name of those yet?
Interesting. Well, fast forward to the episode we were talking about today. We have a really great opportunity to meet the most recent iteration of the Master, played by...
His name is Sasha, and I cannot pronounce. I think it's Dewan.
Yeah, Dewan.
Yeah. By the way, Michelle Gomez was Missy, mm-hmm. just because we're calling everybody else by names except for her.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
Shout-outs to Michelle Gomez.
Yes. She got fantastic.
She got resting evil girl face for days. I love her. She's so good.
There so in this iteration, prior to this, because I know Amy's been doing research on this for some time, what other things has, I'm sorry, what's his name?
Sasha Dewan.
Dewan,
sorry.
What else has he been in?
He was in the episode, well, not an episode, but the documentary special thing, An Adventure in Time and Space. I mentioned that, I believe, last week. Yeah, because that was also where... that first doctor guy came from, whose name is escaping me right now.
The first doctor guy?
Yeah. David Bradley, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Bradley. Oh, you're talking about from the Twice Upon a Time?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, Sasha Dewan was also in there as, like, he was earlier on in the special as, like, one of the early producers of Doctor Who. So they brought him back into actual Doctor Who, which was cool to see him again. Also cool to see him as the Master, because I think he does a pretty fantastic job.
Now, we've talked about, interestingly enough, we've talked about how certain people play certain roles really well and certain people are just, you know, fit for it and some people aren't. I haven't seen The Great.
Yeah.
No.
So
The Great.
Yeah. So he was actually in a couple of things, historically enough.
Well, just because you've been going on and on about that one outside of the air.
So The Great, which is on Hulu, I think I've mentioned it somewhere else. He plays this person called Count Orlov, and it's following Catherine, not yet Catherine the Great, and her husband Peter the however many he is, but he plays a very demure, like timid, completely 100% different from this character. Like, it's complete 180. And so when I saw him in that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so, like, it's a complete departure, and it's still so fantastic. Also, it should be noted that he was Davos
in Iron Fist,
and then he's also in Chuggington. So if you have small children,
he's the good friend of what's his name in Iron Fist. He's the one who's supposed to be guarding the gate. And,
yeah, but he's also done a whole bunch of, I guess, was it World of Warcraft or Mass Effect?
World of Warcraft.
I was like, I don't think he was in Mass Effect.
No, he was in World of Warcraft as a voice.
Mass Effect Andromeda, additional voices. Yay. Oh, well, he gets the add up for yelling. Hey, he gets added in for yelling.
Apparently he was in After Earth as well. Oh my God.
Why is this guy in such bad
things? Well, and that's the funny thing, that those are the films. So he was in, like, Outsourced, Last Tango in Halifax, Being Human. He was in an episode of Sherlock.
He was in a lot of TV. Like, yes. A lot of what I'm looking at here on his filmography is TV. Like, he was in a few episodes of Utopia. He was in a few episodes of something called In the Flesh. He was in a few episodes of something called Last Tango in Halifax.
It keeps going. It's mostly television.
TV.
But to be fair, so me seeing him first in The Great is a complete departure. And even if I showed you a couple sections, you'd be like, whoa.
Well, and the unique thing about Sacha Dhawan is the fact that even if you remember his role in Iron Fist, you remember how that kind of evolution of his character, similar almost to Doctor Strange's, what was his friend's name? The one played by...
Wong.
No, not Wong.
I don't remember what that guy's name is.
You mean
Iwedel Ejiofor.
Yeah.
Iwedel Ejiofor, I believe that's his name.
Was he in Kinky Boots?
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
He was in Kinky Boots.
Either way, he is the one who's in Serenity.
He was in Kinky Boots.
That's right.
Yeah, he's the assassin.
Okay.
Remember?
It's been years since I've seen
Serenity. Oh my gosh. Yeah, he's the assassin.
I keep everything in my head.
But similar to the evolution of Chiwetel Ejiofor's character in Doctor Strange, and how you see the downward progression of this one person who is hoping to be the main focus of saving people and whatnot, and it's like this sense of hope, and it's just drained all the way through. It's very similar in from that aspect. Same thing with Iron Fist. You see that as well. They're friends. He doesn't bring them back. He's upset. Decides to try to kill him. Just kind of goes on the spiral. He also shows that very well in terms of that evolution in Spyfall. Because you have this character that seems very unassuming at the very beginning of the episode. And you're like, oh, okay. And he's kind of like, oh, I'm trying, blah, blah, blah. And it's like very, very under the rug kind of thing. Now, before I move any further, because I saw you just right now and it made me think to ask a question. Hmm. Was this spoiled as well?
Yeah.
Because so...
Well, but this was at least the BBC wasn't the one to spoil this one. It was fans and fan sites.
So Spencer had mentioned...
For so long.
So, well, that's because Google's like, ooh, you like Doctor Who? I was like, damn it. You can't know this much about me now.
So well. Spencer had mentioned that when the last one that we talked about, mm-hmm. was it the last one?
Twice Upon?
It was. No, it wasn't Twice Upon. It was...
That was the last one.
No. We were talking about the episode before Twice Upon.
Which is the one... Not the Dr. False. It's the one like right in there. For Capaldi.
Yeah.
Watch it be the Dr. False.
No. It's not... No. It's not Capaldi. It's the... I'm sorry, it is Capaldi. Yeah. But it was that last two episodes that we saw. We were talking about it in the conversation, but you were mentioning how that it wasn't even BBC. It wasn't even the fans who did it. It was BBC.
About the master. Yeah.
About the master. John Sims was going to be in it.
Yeah.
How they announced it and
it's
everything.
Weird and that it keeps happening with this character.
They like to show him right at the beginning with the credits.
Mm. No. BBC actually announced John Sims was going to be in the episode.
Excited.
No, that's not okay.
I know
that.
I know they were excited.
No.
Are you?
That doesn't make any
sense.
Even
John Sims was mad.
I'm getting yelled at by both of you now. Because, yeah, I see why he would be mad. Because he likes this.
He's like, what are you doing?
And everybody else who are fans of it were like, hey, no, I don't really want people to tell me this. I want to kind of experience it on my own. Yeah. Now you know when to expect it. And you're like, is that the master? Is that him? And it just takes it away. You're now focused on when it's going to happen, not even if it's going to happen. And it's kind of a booty thing to do. But talking about this particular iteration, I really like the way his character evolves, like, into a totally different person. Like, the moment the Doctor mentions about him being, like, a track star.
Which is so interesting because, like, the Master has to memorize, like, this other person's life,
mm-hmm.
Just to, like, pretend to be him. And he gets it wrong about him not being a good runner. And the Doctor's like, oh, no, I read your file. You're good. And he's, like, thinking about it. He's like, oh, you got me. It's like, it's just such an interesting, like, progression of, like, even though the Master's kind of one of the most insane people in Doctor Who, next to the Doctor, he has the ability to hold it together if he really wants to, which is also an interesting, like, twist on. Like, I know, like, the Master has probably done things like this before. He had to pretend to be Harold Saxon. But then, you know, in real world, you know, we elect crazy people too. And so maybe he wasn't actually that.
It's It's true.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Because I could just be like, just come out with this plan. I'm going to rage a war across the space. And everyone's all like, oh, yeah, that sounds awesome. And then, you know, the future kind of send. It's like, I never thought the war would be here type thing. And it's like, like, I could see this very, very easily.
But I have to admit that he is one of the highlights of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by far, seeing where he starts out at the beginning of the episode, the transition that happens while they're on the plane, and even, like, where his mindset is at, all the way through to the very end when you have that last reveal in that, like, holographic message, and it's like, this guy is nuts. Like, I would legitimately believe this guy is cuckoo.
Mm-hmm.
John Sims just looks like he drinks like Red Bull and he punches the wall. Like, yeah, that's what he looks like.
Which, that's pretty... I mean, like, there's not much of the...
Bring me another monster.
Well, and that, I think that's what some of the mania that Sasha captures without having to look it. Which is like, he looks like if you don't give him his chocolate-covered gummy bears and his Red Bull and back away from his bedroom, he will come out and, like, minimize you with everything.
Mm.
I mean, he looked really like Mr. Hyde-esque when he walked into that sequence in Ada with the
Ada reveal Lovelace.
For Ada Lovelace. He looked, I was like, oh, way to do that, because it was perfect madman in an old timey science fair. Like, it was great.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I really did one of the things that I ultimately had to ask Spencer about, and I don't know if you had mentioned it. Is there a follow-up to him returning to the series in the...
Yeah, he's in the later half of Series 12.
Okay.
In the last two episodes, I believe.
Oh, okay. And it's interesting what this whole episode sets up. And I know Spencer, I'm going to leave it to Spencer to talk about that in a bit. But I wanted to see, what are your thoughts, Amy? Because I want to put this into your court before I get into that conversation. One of the things that is constantly being discussed and talked about as fans of Doctor Who and everything, what are your takes on the transition for almost 50 years, it being a male doctor to it being a female doctor? Like, what are some of those implications for you, and what does that mean?
Well,
there's a point to this. I'm just asking.
Oh, no. I'm just trying to think. I'm like, well, there were so many prayers for him to be a ginger, which is yeah, Spencer's like, that's an ongoing joke we never got.
Yeah. I also like when the doctor regenerated to Matt Smith, and he's like, oh, I'm still not ginger. The BBC had to put out a press release being like, okay, this was a joke from earlier. We don't have a thing against gingers.
Yes.
Wild.
That's because that's always been
the
goal.
I know.
But so what I think really what it came down to is it gave the opportunity to acknowledge that the doctor doesn't always have to be a man. That they established Capaldi, with his regeneration, that he or they, the doctor, can take on any face that they've seen. So why not a woman? And it's not, yeah, there's people that be like, oh, my doctor's me. It shouldn't matter. It comes down to the ability of the actor, and I say that as the non-gendered version of every man or woman is an actor, period, of them to do the job to make it believable that they are an alien, you know, with two hearts that travels through space and time with companions. And that's it. Like, it's an opportunity. I know it's been really difficult because there had been such a drum up and such a fangirl-esque movement for Tennant, and even for Smith, and even then again for Capaldi, and then we get Jodie.
You mean like in the news that you received last time about... Never mind.
Yeah. That one.
Yeah, that one.
And so it's one of those. I don't know what it is about that your hero has to be a man for your story to be good, which is a load of garbage, because the storytelling, regardless if it's a man or a woman, should be great storytelling. And the thing that we are finding with Jodie is that she had the same problem that the other guys did, which is she put on her shoes, she put on her coat, and it's the writing still wasn't where it needed to be to support her as a character. Mm-hmm. And it gets better, but it gets worse, and it gets better.
It's a wild roller coaster, and it's really upsetting.
I feel it. But I'm excited to see what she does, because it's not... I love that from the jump, even Stephen Fry... Oh, it's so great to finally meet you. And he's like, no, I was told the doctor was a man. And she's like, hello, that's me. What's going on? And I love that the jump for Jodie as the doctor is like, it doesn't matter if you, the last time you saw me, I was a man. Hey, guess what? I'm still, you know, the doctor, period. You know, figure it out. And how people adapt to it. It's been interesting to see.
And that's one of the things I kind of want to touch on, because... recognizing that the first season had a bunch of bumps and really never seemed to get its footing. Spencer and I had this conversation earlier while I was making apple cinnamon pancakes in the kitchen.
You made apple cinnamon pancakes?
They weren't that good. Spencer will tell you.
I didn't say that.
He did say that. No, your eyes said everything. It's okay. He took a small bite and then he just left it there.
I thought it was his. I thought he was just offering me a piece of his pancake.
He's been kind.
So, no, he didn't like
really
it.
Really thought that.
He tossed it. It's in the garbage.
I ate the rest of it.
Pancakes. We have deteriorated.
So, but we had this conversation earlier and we were talking about how the first season has so many bumps and it never seems to find its rhythm. Mm-hmm. And it with this new season, with this recent season, because 13 hasn't, the third season hasn't come out yet.
No. Mm-hmm.
With this new season, the most recent one, it had its high points and low points. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, more lower points than higher points.
And some of those low points, they go deep.
and we'll talk about that, because I don't think we're going to have to talk about it, because we're going to have to let her know.
It's okay. I'll still watch it.
No. I'm not saying it's a bad... I'm not saying to ruin it. I'm saying in order for you to understand where we're going with this, or where I'm going with this. But
I'm an equal opportunist. At this junction, I'll watch everybody's trash.
Well, okay.
I'm trapped.
So, Spencer, why don't you explain where the episode goes, or where the season ends up going?
The series?
Okay. Do you know what's going on?
Nope.
Okay. Oh, God.
It's okay. It's okay. Well, I'm going to do a lot of what?
But
so you're getting a blind reaction.
But the thing is this. It all stems from the result of this two-parter episode. Really? So that's why.
Yeah, because...
So at the end of
the end of part one, the master says to the doctor, everything you know is a lie. Yeah, he was not joking about
that. At the end of part two.
No,
you're right.
He says it on the airplane.
Yeah.
And then he says, he doubles up, says it again when they're on the Alpha Tower. Before he gets arrested by the other Nazis.
And then
finds out that he's not a Nazi.
Well, and then he also says it again at the very, very end of
the
second episode.
At
the
tail end of the hollow.
After the doctor sees what?
Gallifrey destroyed again.
It's toasty. It's so toasty. And then he admits it, too, that he did it.
Before we get into anything else, can we just talk about that one thing?
Need to listen, because this you don't know. So you need to listen to this man. Hey, let him explain.
Detour, because I want to talk.
No, go ahead. Good.
How could he blow up Gallifrey all by himself? He is a very clever man. I'll give him that. But, like, that's his homeworld. Everyone else on there they are stupid. But, like, they aren't, like, pushovers. They shouldn't be
They took out Timothy Dalton. We haven't seen him in a couple of years. So whoever else
got to renew that contract.
Yeah, I can understand. Take out one Timothy Dalton, sure. A whole planet, well, not a whole planet, but a whole like civilization. That seems like a bit of a tall order. Normally because like you don't see the Master fighting off against other Time Lords too often. So I guess that's why I kind of have a hard time. It's like, they can keep bouncing all time space, but they can't keep track of, like, one Renegade.
Well, remember they tried to put that time, you know, that little time reminder with the drums in his head.
Yeah.
And it didn't go very well. They got there. But to be they got fair, turned around. They got to go back.
It mostly worked until it didn't.
True. I mean, they were tracking him that entire time, too. Yeah. They knew where he was popping out.
Back to the lot.
All right. So back to what's happening in this one. All right. So.
Exploded Gallifrey.
Yes, there's an exploded Gallifrey. We'll skip over the Ruth person for a bit and come back to her if necessary. Okay. But it turns out.
Well, hold the phone.
No, there's a Ruth person.
Hold the phone.
He can keep tracking.
No. Because this is important. Because it's the whole thing that kind of sets this next part into motion.
I guess that is true. Okay. So there's a Ruth person.
So there's a person.
I like Spencer's version of this. You told him to tell it.
Okay. He decided to take the detour. I just wanted to make sure you got the
full... I was trying to save something for her.
There's a Ruth. Does she have Clara aspects? Is she Amy aspects? No. Okay.
There's an episode called The Fugitive of...
The Jadoon. So the Jadoon...
the Jadoon.
Yeah, they're back. They're the intergalactic, interstellar, whatever. They're the Space Force who are
Space rhinos.
Their space rhinos are so hilarious.
Yeah.
Shotoroko. Yeah. So they essentially have this blockade around Earth to keep anything from going in or going out, and they're looking for this fugitive.
Also, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Like, because she's like, the doctor is all like, oh, I can probably tap into their frequency and just slip in before anything happens. And I'm like, you're in a time machine. Just go slip in before
the blockade's in place.
So they end up, the Jadoon,
yes.
They end up on Earth looking for a fugitive. Mm. All the while, it's Ruth, this woman, this random woman. It's her birthday. She's having a good birthday. She's like this 44-year-old woman. She's eating toast. Her boyfriend, who seems to be quite forgetful, forgets ultimately that it was her birthday. He says he has a cake, but he doesn't. You haven't seen it. Don't make that face.
No, I'm trying to remember if this is the one that I just started.
I thought because you said you started episode 3.
No. I finished the Tesla episode, and I think, is this episode 4?
No.
Yes, this
because
is the next episode.
He comes, and she's like, oh, you forgot my birthday. And then she goes to the coffee shop.
Oh, man, we're going to spoil this.
No. She goes to the coffee shop, and she asks for the coffee, and he's like slipping over the file. He's like, you need to read this file.
Yes.
That's as far as I've gotten.
Perfect. Great.
Sorry. I'm so close.
So you're so close.
See, you could have been more prepared for this episode than you thought.
No.
It's okay. I like that I'm so close. It's okay. You can spoil things.
So the doctor and her companions go to Earth, and they decide they're going to stop the Jadoon from doing any harm to anybody because they kill an old lady at the very beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Which,
oh, that's right.
Another side note real quick, which is something I told you. Mm-hmm. Doctor Who has no problem killing people in the episodes.
Nah,
it seems like...
No. They straight up murder folk.
They're like, everybody is expendable.
Oh, you did.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
this old lady was doing nothing wrong.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, she probably had a nice life and it was full.
Oh, I actually
such a bad.
I literally thought you were just about to say she probably had it coming. It's okay. She just.
I mean, like
she didn't send her grandson a Christmas gift last year.
No, she forgot to knit him a jumper. That's exactly what happened.
So
I mean, even the mom, the old mom of Daniel, what's his name, Daniel Barton in the special, she died to the chair. She gets zapped.
That's true.
It's like bye.
So ultimately, the doctor kind of, you know, mitigates them from destroying whatever because they seem to be going after Ruth's boyfriend. So they go up to her flat. They try to explain, like, who are you? Why are you? What are you hiding? What is it that you're not telling us? And she scans them. The doctor scans them. They come back human. And so ultimately they smuggle Ruth out. And all the while, Graham and then the other two companions.
Ryan.
They end up getting. Well, there's one. What's the other one's name? Go ahead.
Yaz.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Her name's Yasmina, but she goes by Yaz.
Also, really, like, it's understandable you don't know their names, which
yeah,
is really
not
sad.
They end up disappearing, like, dissipating out of nowhere. So they're gone, and it's just the doctor and Ruth and those people. The Jadoon, along with someone who's... the girl from The Umbrella Academy season 2.
Didn't even recognize it was her.
I haven't watched season two of the Umbrella Academy. Is it a new person that I don't know that's from the actual cat poops?
Well, she's in this, but they end up killing her boyfriend.
Boyfriends and old people, man. But he's got it out for him.
But he's not who they're looking for. They come to find out he's not the one they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. He's got a tracker.
So
it's the Ruth.
So they go back and they find that Ruth actually might be the person they're looking for, but she ends up getting a message. It kind of awakens something within her, and she totally goes off, takes one of their guns, shoots one of them, puts one of them on their knee, and then she breaks off the horn of one of them and sends them back to their ship.
Shouting in Jejun at them.
That's straight up, that's
Jejun hardcore
shame. Yeah. No, that's shame. That's that's the cutting off of the hair for
very much
the
so.
Dothraki.
So while all this is happening,
get it, the Ruth.
Graham, Ryan, and Yaz appear on a ship that for some reason has been commandeered by one Jack.
Yay! Captain Jack.
So like we said, he's in this episode a lot sooner than
we
in
didn't
this series
preface
a lot
that also you
did.
Had this conversation with me about him being in this episode before.
Well, I wasn't
the Dalek
going
episode.
To I wasn't going to get riled
you
up because of that.
Just wanted to spoil it for you.
Yeah.
Shame on me.
So I'm good now. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. No, so there's the Ruth.
So
there's
Ruth,
the ship.
So over here. Eyes over here.
He
watch.
Was
listen.
Talking.
Listen.
I'm
we're
not
done
a
with
puppy,
this episode
and
yet.
You didn't give
we
me a biscuit. There's still no clicker here.
Listen.
Hey. Oh,
listen, Linda.
I have to go now.
So Ruth gets this glimpse of this lighthouse. They go.
Snap
what you do. No, Ruth gets this glimpse of this lighthouse. They go to the lighthouse. Ruth realizes there's the message that she got, which is follow the light, break the glass. All the while, the doctor is doing some investigating. She goes and finds this unmarked grave outside of this lighthouse that her family owns. She starts digging. All the while, Ruth finds this little break glass for emergency button. She breaks the glass and gets filled with this weird energy. And the doctor is digging and finds a TARDIS underground.
But not just any TARDIS. This TARDIS is a blue police box.
No, I'm trying to think.
You're thinking of things that have not happened in the series.
I'm thinking
this is
of
all
other
brand
doctors thing things.
This
so
is not
thing,
other
thing.
So the reason why I say this is because, and I went over this with Spencer a couple times, none of this is from the previous series. This is all brand new stuff.
Brand new.
So whatever you're trying to do is not going
to
work.
It's connected to nothing.
Exactly.
He's the Stormlord.
So, no.
He still won't watch that episode.
Not surprised.
I know.
Listen, I know you want to do the gatekeeping thing. I need you to listen, okay?
It's a Christmas episode and
we're
the Doctor
listening.
Speaks baby.
We're listening, okay?
Stormlord.
So ultimately, the Doctor ends up killing somebody and ends up coming back to Earth and boots Jody out because they both know they're the Doctor, but they don't know who's real and who's not because Ruth thinks she's the real Doctor. Jody thinks she's the real Doctor. And they both scan as the same person. So
it's the jar problem all over again. It's the Dr. Donna.
So that's where we're at. That's where we're left. I rushed the last part of it.
Okay.
Captain Jack, because he can't seem to pinpoint where the doctor is because that's who he's trying to bring back, sends them back to the doctor with a message saying, beware the lone Cybermen.
Yeah, that's a plot for something else. We don't care about that.
Okay, well then never mind. Yep, okay.
That's for later.
Go. Spencer, go. He usurped this.
So we're going to just hop forward to the very end of the
Thank
scene.
You.
Just to sum it up as best as I can, it turns out that Ruth is a doctor that predates the first doctor. And that's the face that everyone made when this aired because it was bananas. Also, next revelation, the doctor's not from Gallifrey.
Hey ho.
Yeah. So she's from an alternate dimension, maybe? Question mark? Bit confused there. Apparently, the Time Lords.
They go steal snatching babies?
Well, they just found her just standing by herself.
That's not creepy at all. Haven't we learned anything about bringing random strange children home to our planet? We're like, you are foundlings. Look what happened with all the foundlings.
So I'm just saying, one of them turned into probably the biggest superhero for America. So I'm just saying.
The Mandalorian?
Superman.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
I was the Mandalorian like, route. Sorry.
This has to do with Star Wars.
yeah.
Okay. Hey. All right.
So this is essentially Ruth is zero doctor. And
no, because not... she's one of many. Because what it turns out because
is this an all for one problem?
Hold on. So the time I forget what her name is, but like a Shabogan, which is what the precursors to the Time Lords are now called, whatever. She brings the Doctor back to Gallifrey to study her because in her negligence she died and regenerated, and everyone's like, whoa, this is a completely new person. How did they do this? Blah, blah, blah. So they start, like, just basically rapidly killing her to just...
Puts a new spin on dropping a baby on its head.
Yeah. So they start rapidly killing her.
Honey!
Just to understand how regeneration works.
The baby regenerated again.
What?
Just so you know, dropped out of its crib. All right, give it a couple minutes. It'll regenerate. All right. She got the paper. Just...
So, they study the Doctor, figure out how to apply regeneration to themselves, and give Time Lord Society a rise up, and Time Lords exist now. And the Master, upon learning this, is infuriated that, you know, his own regeneration ability is based on the Doctor, and so that's why he goes on a rampage across Gallifrey. That part makes sense for him. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, just the fact that it changes, like, the origin story of the Doctor from, like, I'm just a random person who decided to do good to I am the reason Time Lords exist and I am a god upon myself. It's kind of a lot to take in.
They're also, it sounds like they're trying to make space for the purpose of constant regeneration. Instead of making the give to go to 13 and stopping there, like...
But that was already barely a problem for the Time Lord.
And that was the thing that they talked about, like, when they had established, because we were only supposed to get, what, 12?
12 changes, so 13 total.
13 total. And it was supposed to end after here. But this gives space for them to be like, oh,
but
she
see,
just
the thing
keeps dying.
Is the Master ran out, and the Gallifreyans were like, okay, you can have more. So, like, the ability to just give someone more has always been a thing. And that dates back to the classic series, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah, so...
This coconuts.
Yeah. It was a while. Like, it was upsetting. It's for so many reasons.
Well, congratulations, Ruth, on your newfound regeneration powers. Hope that you're...
They're not newfound.
For Ruth. For the psyche of Ruth before she pushed a button, get the stuff.
No. Oh, well, yeah, I get... Well, because it wouldn't be new to her, because she'd just be like, oh, yeah, I forgot.
Like, and I believe
you forgot your car keys somewhere. Oh, I remember.
Oh, I remember now. I speak to dude and I'm murdering people.
It's true.
Woof.
But, yeah.
I'm still going to watch it.
But Spyfall itself kind of sets a lot of things into motion that I don't know will kind of bode well for the rest of the series if they keep going in this direction.
They're going every which way.
But... Going back to... We took a really big scenic route. But going back to Spyfall, the story element, the writing to it, I actually really enjoyed the writing to those two particular episodes. From the very beginning with the killer car and the, you know, moving through and having Stephen Fry get assassinated, apparently. And this... Some of the elements of this episode... were very much rooted in horror, which was really cool for me because I really liked that aspect. But the race, what were they called?
What is that?
The weird sparkly men with the hats. Because they looked like they were
Kadavian?
Wearing hats.
Kasavian.
Kasavian.
Like cassava fruit.
Yes. The Kasavians. Are they ever mentioned again in the series? Okay. So
that's the first and only time that I had heard of them, and I was like... Mm.
But I did like having like an enemy where the Doctor points her sonic screwdriver at them, and she's like, huh, no readings. Like, That's nice to not just have instant. I have all the information on these guys now.
So it needs a wood setting and a cassavian setting.
Exactly. Which the wood setting made sense, which I was like, okay, that one upgrade. Ooh, new software. Now it reads wood. And I'm like, I like that. That was ridiculous, but it's okay.
What were some of the highlights for these two episodes for you, Amy?
Definitely the master. Mm. He was fantastic. I loved the pops through time with Ada and with and I cannot remember the first wireless operator from World War II. That was really great to see. Mm. It's something that Jodi, the writers for Doctor Who or the showrunners, have been trying to consistently bring in more prominent women in history to give them a more forward space. Not saying that, you know, Dinosaurs in Space with Cleopatra wasn't great, but I wanted more history. Not River Cleopatra. That was great too.
Just say it. You wanted just another Bill and Ted experience.
There's been a very good chunk of Bill and Ted episodes with Doctor But it was really fun to see. The cameo by Stephen Fry was great. Very short-lived. Still very cross about that. And then the fanboy moment that Ryan has when he meets Daniel. So the Daniel Barton character in this is essentially supposed to be like the head of Google. He's supposed to be an Elon Musk-esque character. Like, mm-hmm. he's an amalgam. But Ryan's entire meeting of him is like, "Hi, I'm Logan. My name's Logan." And so it plays this great space where Yaz is like, "Oh, he's just nervous." He's like, "No, I'm not nervous. I'm Logan Jackson. My name is Logan Jackson." And I was like, it played so great into this weird space of he's really terrible at lying, but it looks like he's fanboying, and it was so perfectly acted.
By the way, the woman that you're thinking of, the character Noor Inayat Khan. Inayat.
She was the first woman wireless operator for...
Well, she was a British spy altogether.
MI6.
Not to mention she was a princess.
Say what?
She was royalty.
Well, I mean, Ada Lovelace, like, in watching this, mind you, my eldest daughter was watching this, and as soon as Ada came on and they were in the science fair, I was like, "Who's the only Ada you know?" And she goes, "Ada Lovelace, the one who helped create the first computer." You know, she's also was married to Lord Byron. And yeah. And I was like, "Yep, there you go. We're working good."
There you go. What about you, Spence? What's some of the highlights for you in these two episodes?
The master, clearly, because he just brought it so hard in his first appearance. It's like, "Oh, this guy's awesome. I'm so here for him." And it would be criminal if they did not bring him back ever again, because he was just too good to leave on the side. And I'm hoping he comes back, because he should still have a TARDIS, because he had his flying Wicked Witch house.
Yes.
Straight up. When I saw that, I was like, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
But it spun so nice. Just, yeah. It kept circling.
That was pretty great. The Spy Master song from the soundtrack for this episode. Actually, a lot of the songs in these two episodes are actually pretty good. Like, they're kind of my favorite so far. So, I think...
Since what's-his-name is no longer doing it?
Yeah, Murray Gold has left, and I'm still working on learning the new guy's name.
When Murray Gold returns, we will be like, it was the span between Murray Gold and Murray Gold.
Segun Akinola, I think is how you pronounce his name.
Thank you, new composer friend. We appreciate you.
Yeah. He's getting better. So, like, I'm excited to see where he goes with the next series. Other than that, not really much I want to talk about.
I mean, you gave me that Ruth spoiler. You gave me that.
Yeah, but they're not in this episode.
No, that's like four, actually, after this one. Wait.
Five.
Is it five?
Depends on where you're counting from. If you're counting from the first one or the second one.
True.
Yeah.
So, kind of going back to the question I was asking you, Amy, and this is kind of like just a opinion question. Knowing where... Going back to the stumbles and whatnot of the first season, knowing kind of how they're going with the second season, kind of same highs and lows. Do you feel like the journey for Jodie Whittaker is one that will continue to get better, or do you think that do you think it's going to take time before we actually see this particular version of the Doctor, and by version I mean a female Doctor, kind of find their rhythm? What do you think? Because and I say this with this in mind, because we had this conversation earlier, and one of the things that I had mentioned to Spencer was we've had almost more than 50, 60 years to kind of solidify and fine-tune what the male Doctor should be, should sound, should look, should act. And I say this with context. Trust me, there's context. I already see you squinting your eyes. Because when it comes to any roles, even from way back when, I really like the fact that Capaldi's last episode before he regenerates has the first Doctor be the most chauvinistic person I've seen that holds that title, as like, oh, well, all women are this, or oh, you need to go clean this, or you need to, like, it's like, okay, we get it, you don't think highly of women. And then you have the Doctor regenerate into a woman, which is the best kind of slap in the face to that mindset ever. But looking at what they've done for the last 40, 50 years to create the male perspective, if you will, how much more do you think it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them to kind of find the, I guess, stride for Jodie? Or do you think it'll happen sooner, just got to wait?
So
in all honesty,
to say that this fandom has established the exact parameters of every male Doctor that has shown up is not entirely true, because each of the goal for the regeneration was that each actor would bring something new, something different to the role. That way they could pull from different spaces and each regeneration would have something to lean on, but not say, oh, we are set in our ways. Do I think that Jodie will find stride, or any other female Doctor that decides to follow her? Yes. Is it going to take time? Yes. But what the real big difference is there needs to be a fandom mind shift that you don't need a penis to fly the TARDIS. Mm-hmm. And River and Missy have proven that, including Rose as Bad Wolf on occasion. Now, is it a trying to ease in 50, 60 years of male lead, a lead male as the main character? Yes. Are they trying to show that they're growing in their fandom? Yes. But just like everything, you're going to get everybody that backlashes because they don't like it.
There was a lot of backlash.
There's still backlash.
With them bringing Jodie Whittaker on as the new Doctor.
Yeah, because the expectation was, we need a man. Mm-hmm. We need a man. And the best part about Doctor Who is supposed to be the inclusivity, is that how much they've grown. Captain Jack is one of the best and not even that quiet about. Captain Jack loves everybody. It don't matter what you look like, and it don't matter what you wear. Sorry, I couldn't help that one. But that's the blessing of Captain Jack, and taking it to the space that in being ageless, essentially, as we've just established with Spencer, the Doctor can be whoever the flippin' fart they want to be. And that's okay. And the thing that needs to catch up isn't the writing, which, granted, we need better writers. We will always need better writers. I will always vote for having great writers, giving great stories. But it's the mindset shift of the fandom. It's the mindset shift of the people. It's a lot of
got it. You got it.
Shift. Set. Like, shift.
Speaking of rhythms, finding them.
It takes that. It takes being willing and open to understand that your heroes come in every size, shape, color, and gender, and that's okay. If you can support, if Clark Kent woke up tomorrow and suddenly he was a woman, would you still be like, oh, he's not Superman? Yeah, you call him Superwoman. But is that make, well, who Clark Kent was at their, at his base level, at their base level, any different? Like, I think it just comes down to a matter of what you believe in. And if you are willing to take the opportunity to believe that every story, every gender, everyone has a right to wear the mask, wear the mantle, wear the cowl, wear the boots, wear the jacket, and wield whatever weapon they need to be heard. So going back to that circular thing, you know, do I think it's going to take time? It takes time for the fandom to adapt and move forward. Now, that being said, do I feel that if 13, if literally series 13 falls short, that they're going to can 13 Jody? Yeah, because that's something that they will look at and go, oh, we're not getting enough traction. It doesn't matter if she's a woman or not, we're not getting traction. And they'll make other excuses to force her out. Do I expect that they'll bring in another woman? I have no idea.
That actually brings up another question. If they do, because we've mentioned on the show, you've educated, both of you have educated on the show, that it is up to the actor to however long they choose to want to carry the mantle of Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. Which,
one exception.
With one exception.
The force
out. The one that had to be pulled out by, you know, his legs. So, if they do decide to can on the third season of Doctor Who for Jodie Whittaker, and they went back to a man, would that be a step back? And mind you, this isn't like a sexist conversation. This is you guys knowing the fan base better than I do. You guys knowing the lore better than I do. That's why I'm asking. I'm not going to answer this, because all that I know is just the last four Doctors, and even then, that's sparse information. But you guys, as the informed fan base, as the DNA of what makes up of, you know, the Whovian fans, you know, would that be a step back, or would that be a reset? Because I don't know.
See, I think what they might try to do is they might try to go back to a man, but make it a man of color. Because I feel like, one, I feel like, I don't know why, but I always got the vibe that they were kind of scared. And I don't know what that's even based on. And so I kind of always felt like it'd be a woman, and it'd be a man, and then maybe, but like,
Idris Elba for Doctor Who 2022.
Yes, please. I'm for that doctor. And it's not even because Idris Elba is, you know, adorably attractive. But he would be fantastic as a doctor.
Yeah.
And that's just who he is as an actor would bring so much depth to the role. So I do agree with that. Sorry, I will let you finish your thought before I go.
But just talking about Idris Elba, I would lose my mind.
So cool.
I would, just because I'd be like, oh, so much suave. Oh my gosh.
A suave Doctor Who. I don't know if I could say that.
I don't know how that would
even happen. Or they'd be like, oh no, sorry, you're too good.
Look at Amy, like, over there is turning red at the thought. Oh my gosh.
He would be so smooth.
Do you need me to get a hose or something?
The only other reason why I thought they would do that, just moving on past that, is that so far it seems like the Master is kind of like the step before what they actually do to try to test the waters on things. So it also seemed like, yeah, okay, they might try to do that there too. But if they force her out, that's still going to be scandalous. And like, come on, like, we all know what happened last time we forced someone out. Do we really need to force someone out again? Like, let her leave on her own terms and let her try to do a thing. Give her better writers and like give her better. Because like the second, like they said, we're doing a woman, I was like, please, please do not. I was like, first I was like, do not have Stephen Moffat do it. But then like I saw the new guy, I was like, bring Stephen.
Bring Stephen back. Bring Stephen back. Please.
I'm sorry. Come back. But like, I was like, it's all gonna come down because even because if they give her garbage stories, it's not gonna matter. Because even like Capaldi was struggling to like because like he's fantastic, but like some of those episodes just left him with nothing. And like, you can't do anything if the stories aren't there. Mm-hmm. So I was always concerned for her, and like, because it was all going to come down to the stories that she got. And season 11 did her no favors, really, for the most part. We did see some like upward motion with series 12, and I'm hoping we can keep that going in the series 13. But the ending of series 12 just, everyone kind of just lost their minds for a bit because it was just such a big retcon that people kind of couldn't handle it. Because, like, yeah, I heard some people like, oh, yeah, this is a great idea. Other people were like, this is a terrible idea. Yeah, so what do you think, Amy?
So
she's still thinking about Idris Elba, so give her a second.
I mean, shoot. Like, he would be he would be the smoothest doctor. Like, they would get like two episodes and they'd be like, I'm sorry, we have to pull you. You're not dorky enough. And he's like, I could be dorky. We're like,
he was on The Office.
He was. That was really good. Okay. So moving forward, let me pose this question to you, Eddie. The transition from John Sims to Michelle Gomez, how did you feel?
There wasn't really a transition. It was more of just a reveal. This is. I think that's kind of a different aim from somebody who, and this is why I bring it up, because somebody who has been consistently in every opportunity to create change has been. And I'll even go as far as to say it, because you brought it up, Spencer, a white male, mm-hmm. every iteration, every regeneration, every instance, and then to finally create a sense of change, that was drastic. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, that's unique, especially for a place like England and that part of the world where certain mindsets of progress like that aren't really well received. Let's just be honest. There's a lot of folks, just like here in America, that shows specifically for that demographic, so that's why I say it. But like, just like here in America, there's a lot of like, oh, you better not turn my Captain America to a woman. Like, I'm talking about in the movies. I'm talking about in whites. There's not a lot of rednecks who read comics. Okay. Listen.
I've been seeing them carrying all those Punisher flags.
So, oh my gosh.
Let's not even get into that.
Your grandma's going to hear this episode. Watch, and then you're
behold, grandmother. So, it is I.
So, something like this, like the Master is somebody who is elusive. He's somebody who's deceptive, somebody who you don't expect him to do the same trick twice. Although he may. I'm not saying. I don't know from the experience, because I'm looking at both of you, and Spencer's more like on the edge of like, you dolt.
I'm just saying the Master has a love affair with the Cyberman for some reason.
It's true. So much. It's weird. He does it again. All about the... Again?
Hi. So... So...
Freaky deaky.
So I expect something to be unique and off the cuff kind of thing with the Master. With the Doctor, it has been consistent. It has been the same. It has been, you know, one thing after another. So for them to do something like that, it's very eye-opening to me. And I think that was one of the reasons why I actually started recognizing more of the new Doctor, and I actually gave part of the first season a chance. It just didn't, like, I saw the first episode, saw a little bit of the second, I'm like, and then we went to go see the one this year, and I started watching some of the other ones, but because it's like, there's a chance here for change, there's a chance to rewrite the system, to reboot it, to recreate it, to say that, you know, traditions of ages past does not have to contain what holds for the future. And that's why, like, for me, I didn't feel anything when I found that it was Missy. It's like, oh, cool. You know, this is the master. You know, I figured he would do something like this, or this would be something that would happen. Even in the recent one that we just saw with Spyfall, finding that he was the master, it was a great reveal, but it's not out of his wheelhouse. It's not out of his character. This is something that somebody stuck their neck out for, and this is something that somebody put their career on the line to say, this is how we should take this franchise in this direction. Now, it may not be right. It may not work the first time or the second time or the third time, but let's just see. And for it to create the mass hysteria within Who fans, to create that divide of people who are like, no, this is outside of tradition. This is, and then with the people who are like, hey, yeah, let's see how this works. I have tons of friends who are, and I don't mean this in any disrespect, but who are bigger Doctor Who fans than you guys. Mm-hmm. And like, to see the tears that they posted on their Facebook page and not when they first saw the very first episode of Jodie Whittaker. And it doesn't matter how funky that episode was, they were so excited to see that first episode of a Doctor who has the same genitals as them, kind of thing. And that's the kind of impact that I see, as opposed to like, oh, the Master is now a woman. I could be an evil villain. Like, I don't think that's the same kind of impact that it has. And it's a very fun little transition, but it's not, I don't think they carry the same weight.
Well, I would argue that's probably because most people don't see themselves as the Master. They'd rather see themselves as the Doctor.
You never know. I mean, Matt Smith has probably been looking at that role for God knows how long.
And here
I have to make a mention.
And here I was going to ask you about the growth and the change that Missy takes as the Master, as being trapped in there and working towards a resolution, as someone that is supposed to be under the watch of their best friend, who is actively striving and making changes for the better, which we see.
But that's not based on her gender, though.
They tied that to her gender. And the one thing that got me to the end of that is when we see at the end of Capaldi season, when the Master shoots themselves, because it's like, I don't want this. That is literally what a fandom does to anything that has change. It is straight up John Sims v. Michelle Gomez. And Michelle Gomez is like, it's time to stand with the Doctor. And John Sims is like, I'm the fandom. Oh, no, you don't. Choo-choo! Like, literally, that is what we come up against all the time. And it's from the deep-seated expectation of fanboys and girls who refuse to give the opportunity for change and believing that where their fandom is going, and I'm not going to say we don't need roads, even though it's a great space for it, where their fandom is going, oh my gosh, you should be able to trust the people that are taking care of it. We hem and we haw. Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Rogue One.
See, but you're, I don't know. Now we're getting into semantics of like trusting a cherished franchise in the quote unquote right hands. Because if we're talking that, let me throw one back at you then. And since you're wanting to go that way, Ron Howard, Solo. Thank you. So,
I mean, no. to be very honest, Lando Calrissian in that though.
Mm. Okay, well, you got one thing out of a whole movie.
And the guy that played Chewbacca, Maz. Well, she wasn't in that.
Oh. Yeah, you can't remember anybody who's in it. Do you know why? Because it wasn't a good movie.
Because the guy that played Han was put in
air quotes, the right hands or good hands. You can have.
We should establish this, Spencer. I am trusting.
And mind you,
apparently, the cynic across the table from me, the realist. Pardon me. Always a cynic.
Thank you.
I'm giving him politeness at this junction, I don't get stabbed with a big pointy Yeti stick.
I have not bitten anybody's head off in this episode.
There's the tube of aluminum foil over there that could probably reach
Focus.
Me. Look. You don't know, if you're not willing to take risks and trust the people that are taking control, you make no space for growth, space for opportunity to see what is new, what can happen.
And I'm not saying, no, keep in mind, what I am arguing
hashtag
is your
I don't
last
like Ron Howard.
What I am arguing is your last point, because you can't always. I agree. I feel like there should be enough. Like, this should be a special situation where they got to give Jodie Whittaker enough time to prove that this is going to work for every child who is watching her and saying, that's a doctor that looks like me. Like, I think that is definitely something they should do. What I am arguing the point of is your statement of, well, we have to trust that it's in the right hands. No joke, 2016, we trusted that this country's...
We just proved there were more racists than the rest of us that were actually open to change.
So what I'm saying is, you can't always trust that it's in the right hands. You just have to hope for the best as a whole. That's it. It's not always in the hands of the writers. Sometimes it's in the hands of the actors.
This is a lot in the hands of the writers.
So looking from a larger perspective, from my perspective, when it comes to film, not every director is an astounding director, but sometimes what makes the film isn't the writing. It's the person speaking. It's the actors in those positions. Great example. We brought it up a little bit. Actually, you brought it up. Back to the Future. If Eric Stoltz had taken that role and not Michael J. Fox, we would have had the same writing, but it probably would have bombed pretty hard.
That's heavy.
Michael J. Fox, however, took everything and made it his and became that role. And Robert Zemeckis had cinematic gold.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always the writing, it's the person who carries it.
So are you saying that Jodie Whittaker does not have the fortitude of character to be the doctor?
I haven't seen enough to really give that. I can't honestly give that without seeing a full season through.
Stump.
No, it's the truth. Because like I told Spencer, one of the great things I like about this particular run with Jodie, and talking about Spyfall still, I like her as the doctor. That's why I said I love the writing in this episodes. I love what they're doing. I love the dynamic that Jodie has. Some of her choices as the writing goes, like keeping things from the other people, from her companions, not being fully transparent. A lot of those two episodes really highlight her ability to get the job done. Let's be honest. Graham, Yaz, and Ryan really didn't do much in those two episodes.
I mean, there was a whole dance with laser shoes.
They didn't really do. They were
gave
meant,
the old man a dance with laser shoes.
They were meant to go and be taken to that warehouse.
And land the plane with the cell phone,
which was all pre-programmed and everything by the doctor.
The airplane,
which was all done by the doctor,
and do that interview very poorly,
which was horrible. But I say all that to say, Jodie in those two episodes proved to me that she can, as a singular fixture within the franchise, shine in the way that is unique to her role and her as an actress. And I appreciated it, and I actually liked it. Now, anything outside of that, I haven't really fully seen. The one we just saw, me and Spencer saw, The Fugitive, Judoon, she did great in that as well. I love the dynamic of her still trying to find her feet, which is very, you know, symbolic still of her as the actress trying to find her feet as this role that has been one way for so long. And I know what you had said earlier about, you know, well, you don't agree. I disagree with your disagreeing, because I really
so you
feel
agree
like
with me. Double negative. Whee!
I don't agree that they're not. That they're all different, because I feel like there are so many similarities from the doctors as they go down. You could probably run a thread that meets all of the
yeah,
levels
they all
of
have a penis.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously. I mean,
even,
I'm not checking, but if you did, then I mean, by all means. But what
I mean, considering you know, Tennant ended up marrying another doctor's daughter. I mean, IRL.
But what I'm saying is, there is a level of mindset and attitude that is kind of passed down from time to time within most of the doctors. It seems pretty consistent. Taking a really big swing to the right and picking somebody else to carry that mantle, trying to find that rhythm that that dance that has been danced already for so many years is difficult. And I got to give her credit that the fact that she shows she can do her own dance and still keep up with the franchise, still make the franchise the Doctor Who franchise, her Doctor Who franchise. So, wrapping this thing up, because we have gone for quite a while. Spencer, let's go ahead and start with you. Spencer's like, I'm ready to go to bed. Does the film, or does the special as a whole pass or fail, and how many monocles?
This special passes for me. It's pretty well executed. It's like after the mess that was Series 11, this was actually just knocked out of the park, done correctly, and I was super happy with it. So for me, this one gets like a 5 out of 5. You should definitely watch this one.
What about you, Amy?
It passes for me. Gets 5 out of 5. Pretty much Spencer said the things that I like. I mean, I watched Series 11, so.
But this was, and you still have to see more of Season 12.
This was fun. This was fun. This is where the doctor usually lives as a whole for series or specials when it's fun.
And you had fun with it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Grandma. Dead what? Grandma in a warehouse. Oh,
dead mama.
Dead grandmama in a warehouse.
I really did like these two episodes. These two episodes really did turn me on to wanting to watch more of Jodie and her role as the Doctor. So this special passes for me. In terms of monocles, I am going to give it a 5 monocles out of 5 because it's a great episode. It's not a perfect episode, but it's a good episode. And I want to see where it goes. I'm investing those extra monocles in the future of what this could turn into for more inclusivity. You know, whether or not if it's a doctor of color, if it's a doctor of different gender preference, if it's a doctor who, you know, whatever it may be, bringing in all the different elements of who the doctor is, I want to see it. And I want to see them risk more for bigger game, because I know there's more roads that they could take. And I use the word roads because you wouldn't. So, because where they're going, they don't need roads.
You didn't drop down your sunglasses.
I don't have any sunglasses. We're inside.
It's not committing.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers and concludes our awesome celebration of Doctor Who. So this is around the time, if you're listening to this episode before Thanksgiving, we do want to send out a wonderful happy Thanksgiving to all those who celebrate it and just enjoy that time with your families. We do hope that you are staying safe and staying clean and germ free, because obviously right now everything is still going on, and just be safe.
Yeah. Be right? Careful out there.
Right?
Gobble, gobble.
Okay.
It's turkey season. Gobble, gobble.
And we got a turkey.
Make sure you're wearing them stretchy pants, but you also sanitizing.
True. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm temporary intern Amy.
Class dismissed.